Whether you live in or just love Johnson County, Kansas, JOCO on the go has everything Johnson County. Here's what's happening and what's coming up in the community you call home.
Thanks for joining us for JOCO on the Go. I'm your host, Teresa Freed, a Johnson County resident and employee of Johnson County government. Flattening the curve and stopping the spread of COVID-19 is a top priority. County and state leaders have taken a number of steps to do that, including recommendations to increase physical distance. Today, we're talking with Johnson County developmental supports experts who are going to share how the pandemic has impacted those they serve and also the work they do. In a slightly different format today, I'd like to introduce you to Mandy Flower. She's the Johnson County CDDO Director. She's going to lead a conversation among her colleagues on this topic. So Mandy, thanks for hosting and also sharing with our listeners how you're serving individuals in new and interesting ways.
The Johnson County CDDO is a single point of entry for IDD services in Johnson County. This means that we are the designated area from the state to help coordinate services and supports for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. This includes providing a single point of entry into the IDD waiver services. That's something that you may have heard of before, and we're going to talk more about that today. We are going to discuss IDD services, as well as the situations families are facing with their children at home due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Schools were let out early, day programs shut down, so you or a loved one might be providing more care to your child with an IDD than you typically do. We have several professionals here with us today. I will go ahead and turn it over to Seth Kilber, our eligibility determination specialist.
Yeah, hi, I'm Seth Kilber. I do eligibility determinations, as Mandy said. I've been in the field, I think, for about close to 9 years now. Just kind of stumbled into it, and here I am, and I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Part of my job and my role right now with the CDDO is determining eligibility, and that includes really two components to the eligibility. The first component is making sure somebody who's entering our services has an intellectual or developmental disability. That includes, kind of a wide and broad spectrum of, conditions. We've got, kind of the ones everybody knows and has heard of, things like autism, Down syndrome, epilepsy, but then there are, a lot of different, chromosomal abnormalities and, things of that nature. And then when we're talking about an intellectual disability, that is, something that's usually determined through, an intensive, psychological evaluation done by a professional, formerly known as mental retardation. However, we don't use that language anymore. So the new language is definitely intellectual disability. So that's kind of what I do. I'm the one reviewing that stuff and kind of walking people through the initial steps of the process and hopefully getting them hooked up with services at some point in the future.
We also have with us today members of our community behavioral health team. So I'm going to turn it over to Carla.
Hi, my name's Carla Sadler, and I'm the supervisor for the community behavioral health team. And we call ourselves the CBHT, but we're a cross-functional team that provides positive behavior supports to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities who also have a co-occurring mental health diagnosis. We have three behavioral health specialists on our team that provide mental health case management services. We work one-on-one with the individual and their circles of support, and we help identify, secure, as well as sustain resources needed to attend school or work, depending on their age. And just to help them participate in their community. We address mental health and developmental barriers that interfere with daily living. We help teach coping skills and increase social skills, coping skills as well as increase social skills needed to develop those healthy relationships. As I mentioned before, we work with individuals across the lifespan. To be served by our team, individuals need to live in Johnson County and be at least 5 years of age, as well as qualify for those IDD services through the CDDO that Seth just talked about. The individuals that we work with also have a co-occurring mental health diagnosis and qualify for the treatment through the Johnson County Mental Health Center. And that's just a little bit about our team, but also with me today is Ashley Martin, and she's one of our behavioral health specialists, so I'll turn it over to her.
Hello, everyone. So basically, Carla hit it pretty spot on right there with the description of what our team does. It really varies from individual to individual based off their needs, what we do. So with some individuals, it might look like working closely with the families and helping them identify structure and routine in the home. With another individual, it might be developing and utilizing a PBS plan to address problematic behaviors. And then sometimes it's teaching social skills or independent living skills or coping skills to assist individuals with being successful in the community. So yeah, wide range of things, and it can look very different.
So from my experience, families, parents that have a child with an IDD diagnosis, you know, there are struggles with having a child, and then there's struggles with having an child with the diagnosis of an intellectual or developmental disability. So when school was abruptly canceled, day programs shut down due to COVID, parents took on more of a 24-hour role in providing services to, quote-unquote, services to their family member. So I was just wondering, Seth, Ashley, how have you guys seen the COVID-19 affect families in our community?
Oh, it's definitely had a huge impact. I think that a lot of our individuals that we serve, the need for structure and routine is so important. And with school being canceled and all these activities being canceled, structure and routine are no longer there. So that's been very difficult for families to adjust to. And then you have families that now have their kiddos home 24/7. So that's been a huge adjustment for everybody. So it's definitely had an impact. And we've just been working a lot with families on trying to be creative and establishing routine and structure, and just trying to avoid control battles and trying to address behaviors in the most positive way that they can. But it's we've definitely seen a huge impact for sure.
What kind of examples do you use when you work with families on like the control battles and things like that? What are some ways that you guys have addressed that?
So I think it's so easy to kind of fall into I'm a parent, so I know it can be kind of easy to fall into when a kiddo is doing something that you don't like, you kind of first think of like consequences and this is what's going to happen if, you know, you do this. So we're really trying to work with parents on let's try to figure out how we can address this in a positive way. Let's look at environmental changes. We have to kind of look past the behavior and see, you know, what's the underlying cause of the behavior. And, you know, behavior is a form of communication. So working with parents on understanding that. I know I have an individual who he would associate hygiene and school together. So he had what he knew, school time was hygiene time was meant school came afterwards. So he, when school stopped, he stopped doing his hygiene routine because, you know, that was what the routine was I'm going to bathe and then I'm going to go to school. So when that stopped, you know, mom was really understandably frustrated by that. So we just kind of looked at ways that we can be creative and try to encourage him in the most positive way. So we talked about like bath bombs and fun soaps and things like that. And she went and ordered some bath bombs and sure enough, it really helped. So she addressed it in a really positive way and was really creative. And I think just looking at things kind of outside the box and trying to be as creative as you can has definitely been the advice that we've been giving a lot of families during this time.
It almost sounds like if we look at some of these children's interests and what they prefer and try to build structure and schedules around that, that may be something that could help with all of this time at home.
Yeah, I agree. I encourage staff to create reinforcement inventories is what I call it. And that's where you come up with a menu of different things that could be reinforcing to that individual based on their interests. Because what's reinforcing today may not be tomorrow, but it might be again down the road. And so we need to have a toolbox of things to use to help motivate the individuals we're working with.
Seth, have you seen, our team at the CDDO, there is a process called the crisis process. And that is, if someone is, by definition of Kansas, a threat to themselves or a threat to others imminently, they can apply for what is called a crisis request. And that would bring in services due to that serious situation that's going on in the home. We would like to get people at the CDDO on the waiting list before that type of situation happens. So our goal is to get people who have family members with an IDD diagnosis aware of the CDDO and what we do in the eligibility process. Seth, I'm just curious if you've seen an uptick in eligibility requests since COVID, and if not, what could family members do if they have someone that they think might qualify for the waiver?
It dipped down there slow for a little bit. I think everyone, when things kind of first hit the fan a little bit there, people were really in survival mode and routines just completely disrupted. And so if people were in the process of applying here, everything just kind of got put on pause. But over the last month or 6 weeks or so, I'd say things have started to really uptick. And, on the one hand for me, it's like, it was great. I was able to catch up on some of these, on these ones that I've got backlogged. But on the other hand, it's like, that these families are still out there. And they need these services and these supports. And so, that's sort of the stuff that kind of, keeps you up at night. Sometimes just knowing how many families are out there that need help. And just because something comes along that maybe lightens my workload a little bit, I'm knowing that people, are kind of just trying to stay afloat and just keep their heads above water. I'm happy that it's kind of starting to pick up again and people are kind of able to get the stuff, in and get on the waiting list and hopefully avoid, a crisis situation, down the road. And, I think crisis is a bit of a misnomer a little bit. People hear about it, think maybe this turnaround time might be in a few days or whatever, like, I got a son or daughter who, is really getting in trouble with police. I'll get them in the CDDO and we'll get help kind of, right away. Unfortunately, being in the social services, system, and there is some bureaucratic nature, to it all, it does take a little bit of time for everything to get put in place. So crisis is not necessarily a quick turnaround. The crisis process isn't necessarily a quick turnaround time, I should say. I think some people hearing that, are a little bit let down there.
For sure. It takes a little bit of time for, the threat could be right there and imminent, but unfortunately it still takes a few days for that to be processed and vetted. And
well, not even a few days. Sometimes you're talking somebody who's just getting in, to the system, maybe coming in through eligibility. There's mm-hmm. quite a bit of, hoops that need to be jumped through. We gotta determine the system eligibility, then the functional eligibility, then they got to choose a targeted case manager who meets with them and they help write the request. And then that goes to the state and the state has 10 days to turn around and do that. And then you're talking about the insurance company that pays out the, so this is when you really look at it. And I know on the front facing side of things, the families are just like, we need help now. And so we're very sensitive to that and trying to work as quickly as we can to make sure that the process goes as fast as possible. But yeah, there are these boxes and these hoops that need to be jumped through. And so that's why, you know, we're kind of out here now, wanting to get people, ushering them in through our services and through the single point of entry for IDD services and systems, so that when something like this does happen, you've kind of made it through, you know, a large chunk of that process already.
Mm-hmm. If I'm a parent at home and my child was in special ed classes and now they're at home with me and we haven't talked to the CDDO yet, what would you recommend to that family?
There seems to be two different camps people fall into that I find myself. I'm either really trying to provide a little bit of a sales pitch as to why, you know, our services may be beneficial. You know, sometimes you can get on the waiting list as early as 5. The waiting list is probably going to surpass 9 years, I would guess, and may go even up beyond that. And so a lot of families, you know, well, if you got a 5-year-old and you're watching them, you may not think you need services or help right now. You may have everything under control, but things can change really, really fast. And especially when you're talking about waiting 9 years, that's just a long time, especially if you are in survival mode right now. You know, it's hard to think in advance to when your 5-year-old's out of high school and what are they going to do after that, and what kind of the possibilities are there. So on the one hand, there's really trying to convince people that these services are, you know, can be a great thing and wonderful thing for their loved one's life. And then other people who are maybe exasperated, frustrated at everything. They're burnt out, whatever it is. And they, you know, they're wanting services now. In that respect, it's a little bit of a tempering of expectations. You know, we're not miracle workers. These services don't just all of a sudden make somebody a fully functioning member of society and they won't have any, you know, behavioral issues or, money issues, or they're going to be able to have an employable job, you know, for the rest of their life. So it's a little bit, it's somewhere in between. So if somebody is seeking services, you know, I'd say just give us a call, start the process. We'll do an intake. It's really painless. We send you out the paperwork. You know, there's a checklist of things that we need, and you know, you send that back in, and I'll work with you. And I try to make it as personal as possible for that individual. I don't want people thinking they're just sending something off to some office somewhere, and you know, they don't know what happens after that. You know, I really try to think of the families and the hardships that they may be facing, and really work with them in that way.
And I think that's great too, because, you know, a lot of times, especially during crises like this, it's hard to think about the paperwork you need to do and things like that. And I would encourage families to, if they have time, to look at the CDDO website. We have a link for resources for families on that website. You can also reach out to us via the link to email us, or you can call the CDDO if family members on the waiting list need cloth masks. We have some available. We just have a plethora of resources, and on that CDDO website, you can also learn more about the process, because these services that we talk about are about ensuring that everyone has the opportunity to live in the home and community of their choice, just like everyone else does. It's an assurance to give people the support they need to live as independently as possible where they want. So what our life looks like at 10, 15, maybe much different at 30. So as Seth said, it's important to get on that waiting list, because the funding is about could be a 9-year wait, as Seth had mentioned. So you can have those options available. Our CDDO website has lots of resources right now that could assist you with what's going on today while you're at home during this pandemic with your child and your loved ones. Another thing the CDDO does is we work with the agencies that provide services. So people in, what we term people in service. So these are people that are living in a group home or a day program. They go to day program. At the beginning of the COVID-19, to ensure safety, many of our day programs temporarily closed, and people were receiving day program from home. And, you know, as the pandemic has been very hard for myself and people around me, it's very hard for our people and services as well, because that change in structure, schedule, all of that stuff is very hard on people. So I also know, Seth, that there were also some changes with employment for people.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're living under a rock, you're probably aware of kind of how the tension between, you know, dealing with this pandemic and the economy, and how, you know, millions of people have been out of work now for, you know, months. And it looks like, you know, this, we may be in kind of a little bit of a downturn for the long haul. So, you know, people in our services work, you know, want to have jobs, want to earn money and do things just like everyone else does. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the jobs that they hold, they're working at grocery stores, they're working at movie theaters, they're working in restaurants, a lot of these places that have been hard hit by this pandemic and these closures that we've dealt with, and all of a sudden, you know, they're out of work. And you're talking about a population that historically has already been very marginalized, not necessarily fully included within their communities. And employment is one of those ways that people do feel included and in touch with their community. And now we're out of work. We're not working like we used to. That's going to take more than just a financial toll, I think, on people's well-being. Yeah. I don't know. It's just a very hard thing to deal with. There are no easy, I think, answers here. You know, part of our services include things like supportive employment. There are some other kind of corollary services with vocational rehabilitation services who also help find competitive employment. You know, I think it'll be a long time until we truly see some of the detrimental impacts that people have dealt with.
Carla and Ashley, what's your experience been with folks, you know, going from day program, or they were working and now they're at home 24 hours a day with roommates? What's your experience has been?
We definitely, I would say our team has definitely seen an increase in social isolation, a lot more frustration, boredom. A lot of times the day service and the employment services are a sense of purpose. They provide a sense of purpose for the individuals that we work with. So, when you don't have that, that can really affect your mental well-being. So, we've been trying to work pretty closely with providers and caregivers on identifying new ways that they can feel good and feel like they're being productive. And, you know, we do have some good caregivers and providers out there who are doing really well at this. I have an individual who he's no longer going to day service, and it was really had a negative impact on his mood. And he started doing something that I would have never even thought him to want to do. Staff started working with him on gardening and planting. And so now when we talk, he's telling me about ground coffee as fertilizer and eggs and all of these really cool facts. So I just think it's really, really cool that, you know, a lot of staff out there are trying to assist with, you know, recognizing that not having that day service, not having that sense of purpose can really affect you. So what else can we do to make you feel good and make you want to get up in the mornings and want to engage in activities? And, you know, we have been really working with providers on trying to identify a lot of these activities and being creative, for sure.
Absolutely. And that brings up a really good point with our providers. We have what's called direct service professionals who have been working with our people in group homes 24 hours a day since this pandemic started. While many of us, quote unquote, shut down and started working from home and dealt with those frustrations and worries, we've had direct support professionals going into group homes to provide not only care for people to make sure that they're safe and that they're eating and they're taking their meds, but also helping them deal with these frustrations, dealing with the boredom, dealing with all the things that we're struggling with. And, you know, our DSPs are wonderful folks. They also have families at home and they have a calling to do this. And we want to take a minute and commend them. And they have such an integral role in ensuring that the people we work with have a life of their choosing that's full of dignity and respect. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, they have done a great job of keeping people calm and keeping people entertained and connected, because I know just reading the news, we can see a lot about how people are losing that connectedness. So, you know, there's been a lot of great examples of that by our direct care professionals throughout Johnson County. This has been a very difficult and tough time. There are a lot of people going above and beyond to make there be a silver lining for a lot of folks. And we're very fortunate here in Johnson County to work with these great people and these direct support professionals and businesses that are really stepping up and finding creative ways to try and keep things going and keeping people calm and, you know, having some value in their life during these really difficult times. Carla and Ashley, how about you guys? Any experiences you've had, people going above and beyond that you've seen that have been effective?
In general terms, I do think another part of a role that I think some of the staff have really done a great job in, and I don't necessarily have specific examples, is just helping the folks that we serve keep in touch with family members, because it's been a challenge for anyone to stay in contact with family, but the individuals that we serve are often dependent upon others to help them access the technology or to use it to be able to visit their family members. And that's just such an important piece of this whole puzzle, is being able to maintain those personal relationships. Mm-hmm. I think some staff are really being creative and doing a great job. I've heard of visits out in parking lots where people stay in their cars, that sort of stuff. But, you know, it's just an important piece.
I agree. I think it's great. A lot of our providers are keeping in touch with the circle of supports and just bouncing ideas off of each other and asking for some advice, some direction. Even this morning, I had someone reach out to me about an individual just asking about some different ideas that he had and if he felt like that would help the individual be successful or motivated to participate in activities. So I think that that's been huge.
Absolutely. Now, Seth, if I was to contact the CDDO and fill out my paperwork, how long do you think the timeline would be until I hear something? Like if I'm accepted, how does that work?
You know, it kind of depends, and a large part of that is you call us and we send you out at what we call an intake packet and a letter that just details the entire process and the checklist of documents that will be required from you. You know, things like a copy of the birth certificate, to the Social Security card, kind of the standard stuff there. But really the most important document is the verification that the individual has a diagnosis of an intellectual or developmental disability. So that includes, you know, something signed by the doctor or by the professional who made the diagnosis. Without that, I can't really move forward with the eligibility before that. That's really a state and federal guideline right there. So however quickly those documents get to me, I try to move as fast as possible. When people send in stuff, I'll take a real quick look at it. If it looks like everything's there, I'll let you know I got it. I know how stressful that is sometimes to send something off into the ether, so to speak, and you're not sure if anyone's just looked at it or if it's been received or where it is, and then you're kind of sitting there twiddling your thumbs. So I always let people know if I've got it, what I'm waiting on, or you know, where kind of the process stands, and I'll let people know how much longer it'll take till the next step of the process. A lot of times we'll get people who contact us and you know, we don't hear anything back, you know, just because life kind of hits you, and you know, whatever else happens, and they think, and they, maybe they call us a few years later and they think they're on the waiting list saying, hey, where are we on this process? And it's always gut wrenching to have to say, well, the process was never completed. So if you're on the waiting list, you will know it. It's not something where you're just, it's not as simple as just contacting us and letting us know you've got a loved one with an intellectual or developmental disability and we put them on the waiting list. So it's a little bit more involved in that. And so you will know when you've kind of completed the process.
Are you, you know, if I don't want to leave my house or it's really, you know, my child's medically fragile, is there any way that we can do the meeting through Zoom for the eligibility? How's that work?
Yes, Zoom. We all love Zoom. We're all talking on Zoom right now, and I think we're all well versed in all of its intricacies here. You know, before we were able to be real accommodating, I was able to come out to people's homes if they preferred that, or if, you know, some people don't like strangers in their house. So, you know, they were always welcome to come to our office. However, with new guidelines and things of that nature out, we are now offering online teleconference meetings, which is a little bit different. You know, thankfully the state, who we kind of answer to, has been pretty accommodating and allowing us to, you know, complete these in a way that allows people to stay as safe as possible. So a component of that is doing meetings via Zoom. However, you know, things are starting to loosen up a bit. So if people prefer, we are allowing eligibility meetings to take place here in our office, socially distanced, of course, you know, masks being worn and all that stuff. It's really just up to the families and the individuals with whatever they're most comfortable with. So I don't want to force someone into, 'cause there are people who are not very, you know, tech friendly, and that's not a problem either. So if we need to do it in person, we still kind of have that option for the time being. You know, we don't know where things are going to go here in the future. But it's worked out well. And I think most people have responded positively to the Zoom meetings. You know, if we get one meeting without some sort of technical difficulty, that's a little bit of a small miracle. But we've managed to, or at least I've managed to kind of complete this process relatively seamlessly. So
the eligibility process it takes a while, and families are going through a challenging time now. CBHT team, you know, you have some examples or some thoughts for them to navigate these difficult times. I saw where, you know, some of the pools are not opening up. You know, some of those typical things that kids do during the summer aren't going to be there after they just had this kind of break from school. So what thoughts, ideas, suggestions do you guys have? I know it's hard enough for people with kids that do not have an IDD. So now we have children, you might have several kids at home, one that doesn't have IDD and another one that does. So what are your thoughts, suggestions, ideas for those families who, you know, aren't aren't able to access services yet?
I feel like there's so many virtual activities right now. I think that we've joked this past week that our Google searches probably look really funny as we're like searching for virtual activities based off of our clients' our individuals' interests. But like, for instance, I had an individual that I work with that when the COVID-19 started, I was like, how am I going to make this work? What am I going to do? How am I going to tie it to mental health needs? And he really likes donkeys, as silly and as awesome as that sounds. I looked for donkey activities to do virtually, and I found like a virtual donkey farm. And so I like used Zoom and shared my screen and showed him the donkey farm, and he thought it was really, really awesome. And we tied it into, you know, mental health by talking about, you know, how he feels when he watches it. And if he's feeling kind of upset or sad, that is something that he could do. There's tons of games. There's tons of other, I know I had one appointment with someone who was just really frustrated. I had started the meeting thinking that we're going to work on one thing, and he was just way too frustrated, and he was just venting about being overwhelmed and just tired of being at home. So I was like, okay, well, let's talk about what you're looking forward to. And I, you know, utilized the share screen on Zoom, and we did a collage of things he's looking forward to, like Chinese buffet and going to Walmart and going to Chuck E. Cheese. And I sent it to mom, and she printed it off and hung it on the fridge. So that's something that he can look at and know that he is looking forward to doing that. So definitely there's so many, so many virtual activities out there that can be utilized. Lots of, I think, museums, zoos.
There's even cooking lessons.
Yes, cooking lessons. Yep.
There's also one of our other behavioral specialists mm-hmm. mentioned yoga that's tied to movies, in that I guess you can, during certain parts of the movie, you do poses that coincide with that scene in the movie. And so that's been used as a coping strategy for someone.
I had another, a family that the individual was just, the kiddo was just really tired of being at home. And so parents are a great resource for us also, because they have creative ideas too. So one of the parents put together a scavenger hunt for outside. So like looking for a construction worker, looking for a stop sign, looking for different signs or things out in the community. And they went, and she, you know, made a checklist, and they went out into the community and did a scavenger hunt that way. So,
and helping families come up with conversation starters mm-hmm. to help steer conversations in a positive way. It might mm-hmm. be from a fun game of would you rather during meal times to mm-hmm. predetermined topics to kind of keep the focus in a positive way during maybe a difficult task or during a meal.
Yeah, like we call them dinner conversation cards. So just certain questions that can be, everybody can talk about at dinner, just to kind of help shift the focus from, you know, what's going on and all the stressors right now to good and positive. So there might be questions like, if you could be any superhero, what would you be? But, you know, those can really help change the mood and shift focus to positivity, which is good.
That's great. Now, I don't have any children, so listening and putting myself, and you guys have children, but putting myself in those shoes, to think about being a parent, I would be exhausted. And I know when I get exhausted, I get frustrated and I may lash out, things like that. So, you know, we've been talking about kids at home. What about the parents who are, you know, working and then coming home and taking their child, or, you know, taking time off because they need to be home with their child? What are some resources available for our parents who went from, you know, having their kids at school from 8 to 3 and maybe after school programs to now it's summertime every day?
Well, I would say something that we talk to parents a lot about is self-care and how important it is to take care of yourself so that you can be there 100%, you know, available for your kiddo. If you're not at 100%, then you can't be there 100% for them. So we talk about all kinds of self-care strategies with parents, and it looks different for each parent. For one parent, it might be going for a walk at night, scheduling me time, just taking a bubble bath might be something that a parent can do. I talk to families with, you know, two parents in the house about maybe having like a code word or a signal or something that means, okay, it's your turn. I'm tapping out. It's your turn. You're in, you know, when you're feeling, when they're feeling a little bit overwhelmed or frustrated. I've had parents that have even gone to a hotel for one night, because that's what they felt they needed, and it helped, and it was awesome. So yeah, self-care is going to look different for each family and each parent, but it's so important, and we can't stress that enough. I feel like we talk to parents about that pretty often during this time, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, therapy resources, providing therapy resources to them, you know, sometimes they need to talk to. So.
Yeah. If anybody does feel like they need therapy services, you know, Johnson County Mental Health does do intake where they can be assessed for services. And if they don't qualify for there, then they'll give them community resources to access. If anyone ever feels like they're in a crisis situation in regards to mental health, their mental health, they can call the Mental Health Crisis Line at Johnson County. And that's the number is 913-268-0156.
That's good information because, you know, this coronavirus is causing such a anxiety and things that oftentimes many of us don't really think about. And we already have a stigma in surrounding mental health, or a stigma around, you know, you can't take the pressure, things like that. And I think being able to have that open and honest dialogue about how things are affecting us helps us in the long run, and understanding that there isn't so much of a stigma, that we're all kind of going through this, and it's affecting us all in different ways. And, you know, to be a parent, you know, with all of the different kind of bombs, for lack of a better word, being thrown at you right now, this is a very difficult time for parents. And I think, you know, that mental health resource, Johnson County Mental Health, is a great resource to reach out to, as well as, you know, there's other resources for families. Kansas Leadership, Education, and Neurodevelopmental Disabilities, they're known as Kansas LEND, L-E-N-D. You can follow them on Facebook. They have family education series that are broadcast live on Facebook, and they're archived on the Kansas LEND YouTube page, so you can access them and you don't need an account. If you register for them, you'll get all the handouts and slides emailed to you. But August 13th, Kansas LEND, myself and representatives from Sunflower, Aetna, and United are going to be presenting on intellectual and developmental disabilities waivers. So if you have more questions, you can join or like Kansas LEND on Facebook. Families Together has a great resource page for current resources and activities as well. Their website is familiestogetherinc.org. KU Medical Center, Division of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics. It was formerly known as the Center for Child Health and Development. They're working with the Kansas Center on Autism Research and Training and Kansas University Centers on Developmental Disabilities. And they're all of those entities, and we will post those links, are available to assist where needed and provide information on how all of those different entities support the community and support our families who are working through this COVID-19 crisis right now. So those are some resources. Also, the Johnson County CDDO website, we have a link to resources. We even have, as we discussed earlier, cloth masks available for people on the waiting list. It doesn't have to be your child. If you have to go out and work and come home, you call us and we'll see about what we can do to get you cloth mask. I think we're kind of seeing this now where things are opening back up and we're going back out into our communities and doing things that like we used to do. We have people who run the gamut of I'm not ready to go out yet to let's go out and let's go do everything we used to do. So, you know, I think about our families with children. Ashley and Carla, do you guys have any recommendations for families on how to help their children prepare to go back out into maybe, you know, school in the fall or going to summer camp or things like that?
As we've been discussing that within our own team, we've been talking about the importance of really actually starting to talk about it. Don't wait until the day before, the week before, but start practicing and role modeling maybe what some of those expectations would be. So, for example, if maybe wearing masks might be a scary thing for someone, maybe start wearing it at home. Practice, even if it's just for a little bit, and shape that behavior. And maybe reinforce them holding it at first and then wearing it for a little bit and wearing it for longer periods of time. Maybe make sure that the staff or the parents are also wearing it and role modeling that behavior, tying it to something positive to help increase the chances of success. But talking about what those expectations are like when we're out in the community, the importance maybe of using hand sanitizer or making sure that we are socially distanced from others. I know one of our other behavioral specialists did an exercise through Zoom, but where, and you've probably seen it on the internet, where you stick your finger in a bowl of water that has pepper in it. And when you do that, the pepper sticks around your finger, but if you put soap on it and then you stick your finger in the water, then the pepper spreads away from your finger. And that was just an example of an exercise to try to teach a child about the importance of keeping our hands clean and mm-hmm. washing hands after we've been out in the community and that sort of thing. But preparing, you know, whatever the situation is for that individual, start talking about it now and practicing and pre-teaching those expectations. For some, social stories might be important. And there are all kinds of resources out there on the internet. And there are some about what school might look like when I return. There's social stories about wearing masks. For almost any scenario you can think of, there are social stories out there. And it's fairly easy to make them yourselves as well. And that's something that we would always be happy to help with if the need would arise.
For more information about COVID-19, visit us on jocogov.org/coronavirus. You can also subscribe to a daily e-newsletter with the latest data and precautions being taken in the county and state. And for more information about Johnson County developmental supports, check out the show notes for this episode.
You just heard JOCO on the go. Join us next time for more Everything Johnson County. Have a topic you want to discuss? We want to hear from you. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at JOCOGOV. For more on this podcast, visit jocogov.org/podcast. Thanks for listening.